The last couple of years, I've really been into trying to find 100 baggers, and recently I found a thread by Ahmad Jivrich on Twitter that I thought was super interesting. He shares stories of people that have held stocks for years and experienced gains that are hard to imagine. So what does it take to achieve this? Let's see what we can learn from these people. And the beauty is, whether you are Warren Buffett or Mary from New Brunswick, these returns are achievable. But before I share the thread, the intro. Hello everyone, I'm Guy LeBlanc, and I'm just a regular Guy or guy with a passion for investing, business, and everything in between. There are many accounts I follow on social media that I believe are doing a fantastic job of providing educational, motivational, and entertaining content, and my goal is to curate it so you can reduce the amount of time you spend online searching and reading. This podcast is not meant to contain any financial advice. Take everything with a grain of salt and do your own research. You are listening to the FinTwit podcast, and here is real life 100 baggers. Learn from the pros and amateurs like us. To win at investing, you either have to do something others aren't able to do or something others aren't willing to do. In today's fast-paced world, investors find it hard to be patient. Ahmad believes patience may just be an investor's greatest edge. Ahmad starts off by saying that Chris Mayer, an investor that you'll definitely notice on Twitter if you spend any time there at all, that he has popularized the notion of a 100-bagger. And in this thread, he shares a few real-life examples of successful, patient investors who have achieved the elusive 100x. I just want to add, in most of these cases, this isn't just normal patience, in my opinion. These are cases where 95% of humans would never have the patience to hold for these gains, and why Ahmad might be right when he says it could be the greatest edge. Some of the investors that he goes on to talk about are very public, while others are private, and for those, he does not reveal their identity. So let's look at investor one. He calls him Bob. And Bob mentions an old friend told him about his father many years ago. Upon his father's death, they found a large number of stock certificates the old man had set aside. According to Bob, several of these were worthless, but most were quite valuable. Now, he modified the lesson for his clients by giving the example of a friend that came to him in 1984. He was an attorney that had received an unexpected windfall of $50,000 and was wondering what to do with it. So Bob says, I told him to put it all in Coca-Cola shares and reinvest the dividends and not to look at it for 30 years. The client did, completely forgot about it, and called Bob in 2010 to thank him for the brilliant advice. The $50,000 would have been worth $20 to $25 million at the end of 2010. That's a 400 to 500 bagger, and the shares have nearly tripled since then. So Ahmad asks, who's the smart one? Is it Bob or his friend? It's unclear whether Bob also invested in Coca-Cola. We'll probably never know. And this is, in my opinion, the power of not caring. But the thing is, most people that don't care enough to end up making these big bets. So maybe they put a little money in the stock market, but they often don't put quite enough to have this kind of impact. Now to investor number two. Let's call him John. John's first purchase was Apple, January 2005. John expresses to Ahmad that he should really start using Twitter. Sounds like he has some things that he'd like to share. Apple was a 100-bagger for him, and he's had other winners and losers, but Apple always seemed like a good bet. He generally only buys a couple of companies per year and almost never sells them. He also has a big loser that he kept forever, hoping it would surprise him one day. He goes on to mention that he's not even sure if the ticker even trades anymore. John's engagement with the market varies depending on his schedule. During peak travel seasons, he can go months entirely ignoring his portfolio. Now, for me, this is a prime example of an investor that doesn't let his investments affect his everyday life. As long as he's being honest about it, I do imagine there are some investors that will lie about the impact that investing has on them emotionally, but he seems to be going about it the right way. Nicely done. He goes on to say that he basically never sells unless he's really lost confidence in the company. He's owned eBay for 15 years, and he says selling eBay and putting the money elsewhere could have been more profitable, but he doesn't regret it. He's happy he still owns those shares. John also shares an experience after a trip to Turkey in 2007 where he had seen Turkcell advertisements everywhere and at the time had a good feeling about telecoms. He bought into it and did well for a while. However, the company had a major internal struggle. He can't really remember what it was, but the volatility got out of whack and he sold the position. Now, this is an example that was given to show that for him to sell, it needs to be something big. John admits his biggest fear has been missing out on another Amazon. So he bought books on Amazon in college in the 90s and always thought the valuation was crazy. So he missed out on that one, which ended up being one of the best stocks of all time, I guess. What stands out for Ahmad is that John almost never sells. He ignores markets for long periods. He stays curious about his surroundings. And John is perfectly okay if an investment goes to zero. He doesn't let that bother him. What he fears instead is missing the next big winner. Investor 3. Let's call her Mary. Mary considers herself a long-term investor who rarely watches the markets, but has up to $500,000 movements daily. Over time, the net worth continues to go up. She's always trying to beat her previous record percent in gains on each investment she makes. Currently, that is 35,000% plus. That's insane. I mean, she took Apple from 7,700 to 3 million and QLD from 77K to 5 million. So I had seen QLD somewhere before, maybe on Twitter, but I decided to look it up. And for those of you who are interested, it's an ETF, and the index includes 100 of the largest domestic and international non-financial companies listed on the NASDAQ stock market based on market capitalization. The fund is non-diversified. QLD is leveraged for her, and she also bought TQQQ, another ETF, for the first time in mid-May, and gains are 40% currently. So how long does she hold? Apple, she bought in 2004, before the iPhone, during the good old iPod times. The iPod sounds ancient now, but it was such an important invention, in my opinion. From like, you go from the CD Walkman, where you could only have one CD at a time and it had to walk or run so smoothly if you didn't want it to skip, and along comes the iPod, where you could download hundreds to even thousands of songs on it and not have to worry about it skipping. So interesting times. So back to her, she bought QLD March 2009, which is super interesting, like right near the bottom of the 2008 financial crisis. So great timing there, and not surprising that she made a killing there. Well, let's not forget, she also bought $32,000 worth of Microsoft in 2004, which is now worth over $250,000. Mary's another Apple millionaire, again turning $7,700 into $3 million, close to a 400 bagger. I love that Mary rarely watches the market, but is willing to take big bets after significant market crashes, a deadly combination in a good way. Now, investor 4 needs no introduction, Warren Buffett. And Ahmad considers Buffett a closet coffee can investor. It doesn't mean that he never sells, but his favorite holding period is forever. Buffett has had multiple 100 baggers. Here are a couple. So he bought See's Candies for $25 million, and by 2019, See's had generated over $2 billion in pre-tax income. That's 80x plus profits have been diverted into other businesses. Of course, Buffett is famous for having bought Coca-Cola over 30 years ago, resulting in much more than 100 bagger. I'm not about to do any public math, but trust me, it's a big win. Buffett says that you can always find reasons not to buy something, but in the end, what counts is buying a good business at a decent price and then forgetting about it for a long, long, long time. Buffett highlights, if you're right about the business, you'll make a lot of money. That factor so overrides anything else. For the wonderful business, you can figure out what will happen. You can figure out when it will happen. You don't want to focus too much on when. I agree, it can sometimes take the market a long time to give the business the credit it deserves. It all comes back to the fact that timing the market is nearly impossible. So many people would agree with that. However, if you concentrate on finding the good business, it might take a long time. As long as you're in no rush, eventually the money will find you. Of course, unless you get unlucky, and luck does play a role, whether we want to admit it or not, it's there and something that we just have to accept if it goes against us. Investor 5, Tencent, ticker symbol TCEHY. Tencent's capital allocation strategy is similar to Buffett's, to invest and decentralize. Tencent has made thousands of private company investments over the last 20 years. They almost never sell, and instead they keep adding more and more and more. End of June 2021, their public holdings were worth $238 billion. Now, that's what Ahmad calls a modern coffee can portfolio. This reminds me, I still need to do some research into gaming. I want to invest in the gaming industry at some point, preferably find a 100 bagger in the sector, obviously. But yeah, still got a lot of work to do there. I'll let you know how it goes. Investor number 6, Ahmad chose to also talk about Chuck Acker. And Acker has also experienced multiple 100 baggers. Two examples are American Tower, ticker AMT, and Berkshire Hathaway, BRK. In 2011, Acker gave a fantastic speech titled An Investor's Odyssey, The Search for Outstanding Investments. And here he talked about a great book which inspired him. The book was called 100 to 1 in the Stock Market, authored by Thomas Phelps. Acker implements Phelps' ideas in his three-legged stool framework. And this involves investing in businesses that, one, have compounded value per share at high rates, two, employ highly skilled managers with a history of treating shareholders as partners, and three, can reinvest free cash flow at above average returns. Let's have a look at investor 7, Voya Corporate Leaders Trust. The year was 1935. Franklin D. Roosevelt was in the White House and Babe Ruth was a Yankee. And the Dow was trading around 100. It is at this time the Voya Trust bought equal amounts of stock in 30 major U.S. corporations. Guess what? They haven't picked a single new stock since. That's more than 85 years of compounding. Ahmad says this is a true coffee can. According to the Trust's 2018 results, $10,000 invested in 1941 would have been worth around $21,500,000 at the end of 2018. That's 2,150x. Interestingly, that's less than 10% compound annual growth rate. Pretty impressive, I'd say. 19 of the original stocks still remain in the portfolio in some form, but many of these have morphed through mergers and acquisitions. And he also has the portfolio listed on the thread. And I'll mention some of the companies. Union Pacific Corporation takes on 41.6%. Berkshire Hathaway, 13.8%. Exxon Mobil is there. Marathon Petroleum Corp. Procter & Gamble. Chevron. Honeywell. Some interesting names that have just been in the portfolio since the very beginning. For investor number 8, Ahmad chose Dr. Herbie. Herb Wertheim, aka Dr. Herbie, is a self-made billionaire worth over $2 billion. He's known to be one of the greatest investors you've never heard of, an optometrist who beat the odds to become a billionaire. His fortune comes from a result of two things. He started a successful business that does about $10 million a year in profit. And over his lifetime, Herb continuously redirected his business profits into stocks. Herb says, you take what you earn with the sweat of your brow, then you take a percentage of that and you invest it in other people's labor. His goal is to buy and almost never sell. He bought Microsoft shares during the IPO, and it has been paying dividends since 2003. This was worth $160 million as of 2019. His 1.25 million shares of Apple were worth $195 million as of 2019. Not all of the hundreds of stocks he's owned have fared so well. Ahmad rightly points out that this doesn't matter at all. So what's common amongst them all? All these investors that have held 100 plus baggers. So number one is patience. To make this type of money in stocks, you must have, and this is a quote from George F. Baker, you must have the vision to see them, the courage to buy them, and the patience to hold them. Patience is the rarest of the three, according to Thomas Phelps, who, let me remind you, he's the one that wrote 100 to 1 in the stock market. Ask yourself this question. Could you have been as patient as any of these investors? I'm hoping I can. So what else is common amongst these investors? Number two, they have a simple investment thesis. The investors mentioned did not use overly complex models to invest. Instead, they invested based on a simple thesis. Here's what Mary said when Ahmad asked why she invested in Apple. She said, Apple, as you know, is a religion. Ever since 1980, people will defend their products even if they're bad. Chris Camillo claims he started the strategy of social arbitrage, but sounds a lot like what Mary was doing. Here's what Chuck Acker said about why he invested in American Tower, AMT. We saw a basic business model in its simplicity, which is more towers, more tenants per tower, and more rent per tenant. We saw that tower level margins were about 90% and cash flow margins were about 50%. Now let's look at another trait that's common amongst these investors. Number three, smaller is better than bigger. The law of large numbers is harder to overcome as a business gets bigger. It's not to say that a large business cannot 100x, but there simply are fewer of those. Betting on smaller businesses gives us better odds usually. So Ahmad also considers that there are both amateurs and the professionals that have had these experiences, and I believe he provided a solid mix of both in this thread. He suspects, and I do as well, that there are many more unknown amateur investors out there who have successfully achieved the much coveted 100 bagger compared to the number of professionals who have done so. In my opinion, professionals often have to follow rules that don't allow them to hold these stocks for this long. We can make our own rules. The stock market can be a wonderful wealth equalizer. And the beautiful thing is that you don't need anyone's permission to participate in it. We just need a brokerage account, a little money to get started, and enough confidence in our ability to learn. Okay, before I forget, Ahmad did mention one final investor, a bonus investor, he calls him. How can we forget Forrest Gump? Lieutenant Dan got me invested in some kind of fruit company. So then I get a call from him saying, we don't have to worry about money no more. And I said, that's good. One less thing. Ahmad and I think it's quite all right if you have never experienced a 100-bagger. I've yet to do it. It's hard. But more importantly, it's not a requirement for success in the stock market. And it's okay if it's not one of your goals. It definitely is mine. And I'm having a lot of fun trying. And if I never succeed, I'll be okay with it. But I'm not going to give up that easily. I really hope you enjoyed the thread. I strongly encourage you to follow Ahmad on Twitter at Mr. Jivraj. So at MRJIVRAJ. Also have some links in the show notes I recommend you to check out. Ahmad is trying to become a better investor and wants to help you do the same. He believes that the venture capital mindset applied to the stock market is one way we can all beat the market. If you want to learn how to invest like a VC in the stock market and find stocks that can double, triple, or more, then his newsletter, Playing for Doubles, is for you. Join him as he searches for these stocks and helps you find your own. He buys and shares baskets of stocks called coffee cans. The idea of a coffee can is simple. You try to find the best stocks you can and let them sit for years. You incur no costs with such a portfolio, and it is simple to manage. Thanks for listening, everyone. You can follow me on Twitter at Guy_LeBlanc. And as always, I encourage you to provide me with feedback if you get a chance. Till next time, stay fit, stay rested, and have fun.